This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks. 97 Gold presents Your Money with Fay Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Fay Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm wonderful. It's a beautiful day.
Every day is a beautiful day that, one, we're above ground, and two, it's warm, and three, the sun is shining.
That's exactly right. You know, we've had some cold weather this week.
Oh, my goodness. It was surprising. I thought once, this is my foolish mind, I think once we hit 90 for the first time, we're home free. And then when it gets down to like 50 and like 60, then I start realizing, oh, we're not home free, and it's still actually spring.
Yes, and what I was shocked about is every morning this week, it was like 39, 40 degrees.
Yeah. It was a little bit chillier than I was really planning on. I kept wearing shorts thinking, my goodness, it's going to warm up. And then it just, finally it did, but, you know, now I'm wearing pants, and so it's 1,000 degrees outside. I have it a little bit backwards.
I cannot imagine wearing shorts this week. It's a little bit cold for shorts this week.
I was being ambitious.
Yes, you were. You were counting on something that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm glad we're here and alive. And, you know, we're going to tell people how to make some money and to do it comfortably.
Well, let's do that. What's that phone number?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to my favorite store, Ivy Cottage.
And you can always check out the website. It's AmericanFinancialMidland.com. You can see case studies, data from past investments. You'll know exactly what people made, so you can see for yourself. These are real hardcore numbers, so you can look at the data and say, probably like I do, at least the first time I saw it, I was like, holy smokes, I cannot believe that people made this much money, but they do, and it's all from investing in things like life insurance policies.
It is, and, you know, it's steady. That's what I love about it, is, you know, if you've got five or six policies, they're going to come in one at a time, and, you know, some of them are going to come in on time, some are going to come in early, and some will come in late.
Yeah.
But overall, you're going to make more than I think you can make almost anywhere.
Oh, sure.
They're averaging 22% for last year, and we've already had 8 maturities for this year, and that's a lot.
Really?
You know, I mean, we're just starting on April, so we've had 8 maturities. People made a lot of money. You know, it always shocks me when I see the actual numbers. When I look down and I go, let me look at that policy and see how much they made. Well, they made 25% or 24 or 27, and you know, Lombardi, which we did at the end, matured at the end of the year. You know, it only went 6 months, and then one of these others that has come due was 30 months. And it came in at 18, that's a little bit early.
What was that projected Lombardi supposed to go?
I believe we could look it up real quick, but I think Lombardi was 24 months, and it came in at 6 months.
Wow. That's
amazing. A man died a lot early. And, of course, you know, you never know for sure, but the doctors that we rely on are just pretty good at this, and sometimes they're like me. They're very conservative, so they'll go out farther than they really think it's going to be. And, of course, you know, Fasano is always a little farther out, and usually it comes in quicker than Fasano says. Sometimes they're on the money, but a lot of times it is quicker. And we've got contracts signed on about 10 new policies. We should have these in hand next week. They were hard to get. You know, I talk about this a lot. people commit to these policies, then their broker comes back and says, oh, you don't want to accept that. I'll get you more money. And sometimes they do, and sometimes they don't. You know, we had a guy, had a $500,000 policy, just could not wait. He has no family. He wanted that money to spend before he dies because he knows he's not going to live long. And his broker come back and said, oh, let's borrow on the policy.
Ooh.
So they borrow half of it and then say, okay, you can buy the rest. You know, that's crazy. But, you know, it happens every day. People are always out for that last nickel, and I understand it. But the brokers charge them a lot of money and don't always give them the best advice.
And that's not really keeping the client's best interest in mind, is what it sounds like.
They aren't. They're interested in their percentage and what they're going to get. And they do charge them, you know, a lot of money for this. And it's always pretty shocking. And, of course, as you know, we use licensed providers. We have to. We cannot go out here and buy a policy in Georgia or Florida without using a licensed provider. They have to be licensed in the state that they're going to sell those policies in. So they're licensed in probably, you know, 40 states. A lot of them are not licensed in New York. New York is a strange place. But they're licensed in almost everywhere else so they can, you know, deliver a policy to me from anywhere.
Well, New York is a strange place, but I think we think that for different reasons.
Well, I know that years ago, a lot of the life insurance companies would tell me, Faye, we operate everywhere but New York.
Really? Why is that? What's?
I don't know. Apparently, the rules are really different in New York State. So a lot of them just say, we're not going to get licensed there. We're licensed everywhere else, and it just, you know, we're not going to do business with anyone in the state of New York, and they don't.
Wow, that's kind of strange. So when you look at these policies and you go to bid on them and you buy them, you're actually getting them. You're not trolling Craigslist looking for some guy trying to sell something.
No, we're not. Every day I get LEs from all the companies that I do business with, every one of them. They send me LEs. We read them and read them and read them and see if we can make sense of them. If it looks like it will, that it is going to mature on time or early, you know, we're there. We're going to buy that policy. And by law, every policy we turn down, we have to keep a record of it. If we turn a policy down, we have to hold a copy of it in
really?
Our files. Oh, yeah. This is very regulated. You have to do it by the book. So, you know, we keep a copy of the ones that we turn down. And then, of course, the ones that we accept, you know, we start working on that. When we get a signed contract, and then they have to change it over the ownership, they have to send a copy to the life insurance company and say, the ownership on this policy has changed. It's no longer Joe Blow, okay? It's going to be whichever bank we are using. And as you know, we use two banks. We use Bank of Utah and Nevada Trust. And so that they have to have that information.
Okay, so
and
say
once it's transferred over, then we're going to pay them for their policy. And so the money, let's say we're going to put 10 people in it. They've already agreed to it. It comes out of their bank accounts over to the escrow account, and then the bank pays it to the person. So the bank handles all this for us. People ask me lots of times, well, what does a bank do for me? Well, they do several things for you. First of all, they handle the money when we're buying a policy. They handle your money going from your account to the escrow account. They pay the premiums for us, where they know that all of our premiums are paid. That's what the bank's service is. The other thing the bank does for us, when the policy matures, the person has passed away, the bank gets the certified death certificate for us. They have it. They send it to the life insurance carrier, and then they pay the people for us. So there's four things, big, important things that a bank does. And they charge a fee for this. They charge, $250 per client. Well, Now, Nevada Trust is, you know, they're going to stay with that $250. And then they charge me a fee. And my fee, of course, is pretty high. But Bank of Utah right now is going up on their fees. A lot of people do not like that. It's only $100, but they're upset. So those people will be moving over to Nevada Trust, and the ones that can. Some of them cannot because their money is invested in big policies, and everybody in that policy would have to agree to it.
Oh, wow. Oh, everybody has to agree.
Yeah. So if everybody agrees, sure, we're going to move their account over. And there is some extra things that Nevada Trust does provide. They will provide the 1099s on custodial accounts at the end of the year. And, of course, Bank of Utah will not do that. Has not done it all these years anyway. And Nevada Trust is going to be coming to Texas next week to work on this for those who do want to make that changeover.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, so we'll see how that works out for them. You know, we always want to do what the client wants. And, you know, a lot of them said, you know, I don't think they provide enough for me to pay them $250, much less $350, since they're going up on them. They don't like that.
I can understand that. But it's really to protect really everybody involved, to make sure that everything is safe, everything goes through that checks and balance system, and everything is handled by that third party.
Yes, everything's always handled by a third party. We make sure that we do not touch the money ever, and none of it ever goes to our account. And then Mike Irie tracks the policies for us. He's over at 21st Services, and we pay for that. We pay about $9,000 a month for him to track the policies.
Oh, wow.
Yes, we have to track every policy. We need to know when they pass away. We need to know if it goes over. We need a new life expectancy. We want to know how soon are they going to pass away and what prevented them, you know, from dying when we thought they were going to, you know. So they get new medical information for us if the policy goes over.
So okay? They really have a whole database of information.
Yes, they do. And we're doing new software now. The new software that we've got coming is going to help us. Every time we pay a policy, it will automatically subtract from the balance, automatically, on all policies. And it tells us every month what day a bank paid them. And we've been doing that by hand. And so this will save a lot of time and will automate that part of our business. And that's going to be good.
Yeah, that'll be great.
You know, nowadays, everything that you can automate, it really does help you.
Oh, sure.
You
know? Not only with man hours, but also with, you know, speed and getting a lot of this information. If it can generate itself and just be there in a report, computers can do these things much faster than people can.
They really can. And a computer will do, like if we had 8 policies due in one day, you know, it'll do all of those just instantly. You know, we don't have to go in there and hand do that anymore and figure that out. And so, you know, we are modernizing every time we get the opportunity.
That's great.
So that helps our clients, too.
Yeah.
So the clients, you know, they procrastinate a lot about, you know, coming in and seeing us. And sometimes they're going to wait 6 months to a year, and that's okay, you know. But when they come in, we love to see them. We love to help them. And, you know, they must have a net worth of $1 million without their house. They've got to have it. Or they've got to have income on that account of per year. If it's an IRA, that person has got to have $200,000 a year in income. Now, I had some people sometime back. And he said they were not qualified. They were, and I went and looked at his wife's account, and they make $300,000 a year.
Well,
and that's proper for a couple. You have to make $300,000 if it's a couple. They had it. They also got $1 million.
So they thought they weren't qualified. Yet you looked into it, and it turns out they were.
They were. We went back and were auditing, and come to find out, he put down the wrong thing. He checked it wrong. And so we want to be sure, you know, with as tight as the rules are, we want to be sure you have the proper credentials coming in. And, you know, we just cannot take anyone that doesn't meet that criteria. We're not going to do it anymore. You know, we had another system we could do it, and we've made that decision. They will have to meet all the criteria.
So it's $300 for $300,000 for a couple. What about just a single person if they just wanted to do this solo?
They have to be worth either $1 million, you know, without their house, or they have to have $200,000 in income.
Okay.
So if you look at what they've got, lots of times people don't even realize their 401k accounts, their IRA accounts, their stocks, their bonds, their oil properties, their oil leases counts. If they've got rent houses, it counts because they've got a lot of income off those rent houses, much less what the houses are worth. And then they've got ranches. You know, they've got farm. They've got farm equipment, you know, all kinds of things. And all that stuff does count. And lots of times they're, you know, worth a lot more than what they think.
Yeah,
I've
guess...
seen people that thought they were worth $700,000. They were worth $2
million. Wow.
Yes. So we will help people with that. We will make sure, you know, what their assets are. We're going to ask them all those questions. Then we're going to say, what have you been making where you are? Are you making 2%, 20%? You know, what are you making? And we go over all this. And how soon do you plan to retire? Are you going to retire in 10 years or 5 years? And, you know, we had a lot of people retire this year. I've got another couple that's retiring in May and moving to Colorado.
Oh.
They're going to live outside of Denver. They're building a house. But, again, it's one of those cities that they make it where you almost can't even build just to get their sewer system in, you know, out in the country. It took, I think they said, 6 months to get it approved.
Oh, really?
And they had to use an engineer. Yeah. I mean, you can't just say, you know, go to a contractor and draw the plans and do this. You've got to wait a long time. And I thought because they were in the county, it wouldn't take that long. But when people get ready to retire, a lot of times they're going to move to a small town. They're going to move to East Texas. They're going to move to Granbury. We have a lot of people who have retired in Granbury. It's a small town. It has a wonderful lake there. You know, it has all those golf courses. And then you've got all the culture downtown. They have two or three little theaters that I've went to a lot of times. They have good plays, and they have good food, so people are moving there. So when they come to us, you know, they're going to tell us their retirement plans, where they want to retire, and how much money it's going to take, you know. You can't retire on $50,000 a year, let me tell you. I don't care who you are.
Oh, no.
Yeah, even if everything's paid for, which it should be at this point in your life, but you need to have the money where it's growing. You know, if it's not growing, you're just backing up. If all the money's in the bank, certainly it's safe.
And
but
the whole...
you know, what is it making? Is it making 1% yet or just 0.5%?
And the whole point of you know, doing all of this and going through the process is so that people can continue to grow their money, not just to put them into policy and then it's just one little isolated thing. You're looking at the big picture. You know, how much do you have? What is already put away? What is already paid for? How much do you owe on anything? Where is all this money coming from? What kind of lifestyle do you want to live? You're looking at all this and putting together a plan for people.
We are putting plans together every day. And, of course, when they procrastinate, it takes them so long to get over there, they say, Faye, I wish I'd come 2 years ago. And they should have. If they'd come 2 years ago, they would now have some policies that have matured. And I did have some people a week ago that had a great policy that matured. There were several of them in it. And, you know, they made quite a bit of money. And that's always good. I love it when... You know, when it comes together, it was early again. So that the people that were in that, they're going to be, I think, retiring earlier because they had large amounts in that policy. It came due, you know, they made 25%, and they made it in a short length of time. You know, it wasn't a long time. So, you know, I encourage people, come and talk to us, see if we're for you. We might not be, you know, it might not fit. But usually it does, We work hard on these policies, getting them in policies. Sometimes it takes longer than we think. But we've put people in an awful lot of policies in the last 3 or 4 weeks, a lot. And this next week, we'll be putting them in even more.
So say I was a new customer, and I've never invested, I've never come talk to you before, and all of a sudden this week, I make an appointment, I come call you, I talk to you, we sit down. How long would it take to, generally speaking, I know it varies, but in general, how long would it take to get into my first policy?
Probably 2 to 3 weeks. First of all, if it's a 401k, we've got to get that from your employer. If you've changed jobs, you know, we're going to send for it. And sometimes it takes 2 weeks to get that money over. Now, if it's a cash account, you know, we can invest it rather quickly. I have a lot of people just come in and they write a check. Well, if you write a check, you know, we're going to be able to get you in a policy quicker. Mm. Now, if it's not that way, if it's coming from an IRA, if it's coming from an annuity, if it's coming from a 401k, it'll take a little bit longer. But the first thing we have to do is get an account at the bank. You must have an account at the bank to roll money over. So we're going to open up that account, get you the account number, get you set up where you can go online and look at it, okay? Because we do everything online. When we're going to invite you into a policy, we send you an email and tell you, we have this policy, we'd like to see you go in it, read it, tell us what you think, and if it's okay, you know, we want to put you into that policy. And every once in a while, somebody thinks they're smarter than me, and they'll say, I don't want to go in that one. Well, they go to the back of the list, let me tell you, because we've got a lot of people that would love it, and we just keep going. Kimberly over at our Dallas office said the other day they had some people, and they emailed the guy twice. They called him twice, couldn't reach him. And they held it open for 3 days. Then they had to go on and put somebody else in because we were ready to close the policy. So it is imperative that you do check your emails. If you don't check emails, you won't know what policy you just missed.
So why would somebody turn one down?
Because they think, oh, I don't think that's a good policy. I'll get a better one. And you know what? It's just not true. I mean, you know, the one last year that I'm still talking about, you know, I don't remember the name. Anyway, you know, it was a 30-month policy. And a lot of people said, oh, I don't think I like that. And I go, well, I'll just buy it myself. I mean, I love the policy. And, you know, the policy came in. Like in 8 or 9 months.
Oh, wow.
The guy was really sick. And you have to look and see what all have they got. You know, breast cancer is one of the things, if it's just right, we buy a lot of those breast cancer policies. Because when these women go to Mexico for treatment, I mark it down right then, this is going to be a good policy because, unfortunately, that person has made the decision that the American doctors don't know what they're doing, I'll just go to Mexico. And that's not the way it works. You have to do everything you can here. You have to do whatever they tell you, whether it's chemo, radiation, surgery, whatever it is. And lots of times people don't do that. They say, oh, I'm going to go to Mexico. I know they can save me. Well, they come back, and I read one where the doctor said, I've not talked to this woman in 6 months.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so they'll wash their hands of you. If you don't do what they tell you to do to preserve your life, they just say, you know, I don't know anything about her now. And we have had some. We had one that went to the Philippines, and that one has just come back, and we're buying her policy. She said, I want to make my sister in the Philippines, you know, is an executive. And I said, we said, no, 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 no. We're not dealing with someone in the Philippines. You know, you've got to do something here in the States with somebody right here. We're not doing it.
I know the value of the policy doesn't change, but is there a difference between, you know, somebody who's actually going through chemo and doing the doctor recommended steps as opposed to somebody who does try to do some kind of alternate
Yes,
therapy.
There's a
does
big
that
difference.
Does it affect how you bid on it? Do you bid more aggressively?
Yes.
For one,
I'm going to darn sure bid on it aggressively because I know darn well that they're going to pass away a lot sooner if they went to Mexico or Venezuela or South America. I've never seen one yet, and I may be wrong. I've never seen one that survived the 24 months or 25 months if they went out of the country.
Wow.
It's just, and you know, we've had several breast cancer policies have matured this year, and that's why I say. And then I've had some that they've had it for several years. Well, if they've had it 5 years, they're probably going to make it. You know, they're still showing, but I'm telling you, if they've had it that long, I don't figure they're going to anytime soon. But the ones that have just had it since 15 or 16, and it's, you know, all different places, not just breast cancer now, no, I don't believe they'll make it because it's already went to the brain, it's the spine, the vertebrae. You're not going to make it. So, you know, thinking positive about it, we try to buy the ones that the maturities are going to be on time. You know, if you can make 24% in 24 months, it's great. But if you can make 24% earlier, like 18 months or 12 months, it's going to make your maturities a little faster when you get ready to retire.
Oh,
you know,
sure.
It's going to help you.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's our goal.
So what happens? Take me on the other side. I know we see all these wonderful benefits and things, but there is a few risks. They're relatively small, especially when compared to the stock market and things like that. But there are risks involved with this.
The biggest risk you're going to have is if it goes over, and then you've got to say, okay, I knew that it could happen. It's going to cost me $500 a year or $500 a quarter, and I may not see that money on this policy for two more years. You know, you've got to be prepared to wait another 2 years on that policy because it could happen. We've got some right now that we bought from somebody else. These are not some of them are policies that we bought, you know, several years ago. It was a blend. We shouldn't have done it, but we didn't know back then that those people, those elderly people, as I talk about them, bless their hearts, all the time, they were not sick. They led us to believe they were, but they weren't. And that policy is still going. And we hope that it will mature this year. I hope it does. But it's a blend. There's two different people in it. And one was 72 when we started, and one was older than that. I think the other one was 80-something. But it has not matured yet. So that was a risk, and we're in that risk right now. So the people are having to pay it. Now, most of our policies, the premiums are very low. That thing is not low. And I've helped with the premiums, you know, all this time. But the premiums will be due at the end of 17. They will have to start paying if the person has not passed away. So there is risk. And the risk is it could be delayed by 2 to 3 years. You know, now we had one that just one person was in. It went over about 6 months, but they made a lot of money on that. They knew going in the premium was high because we said, look, you may not want to do this. The premium is high. They said, no, for what I'm going to make, I'm going to do it. Well, you know, the risk versus the reward on it was worth it. It was 6 months late, but they did pass away. They now have the money. So that one was worth it. And a lot of people don't understand life insurance companies. Let me go over this very carefully. The life insurance companies that we use are worth billions and billions of dollars, $4 billion, $5 billion, and up. So the risk of a life insurance company ever going under is less than a gnat, okay? I mean, it's that small. So I have to tell them that there is a risk a life insurance company could go under. Somebody called me the other day. Oh, my gosh, what if the life insurance company goes under? I said, put your money in the bank and leave it there if you're that scared. I did. I just told them right out. I mean, you know, it's not worth it to me. If you don't understand how big the life insurance companies are in this country, you know, they're bigger than the banks. You know, most of them are bigger than the banks.
Wow, that's huge. But I don't remember any life insurance policy company going under. Has there been any?
Well, in Texas, they haven't. There have been some go under. But another life company always buys them because they're worth so much. Remember, they've got all this life insurance they've read. You've got all that premium income, which is tremendous. So unless they have bad management, they're not going under, okay? And you can look at what our regional banks are worth compared to the big life insurance companies. Lots of times your banks are on credit watch, okay? And you can go, and I do this every once in a while. I look up to see what banks, what their ratings are, you know. The life insurance companies have to put up a lot of reserves. Banks don't have to. They don't have to put up hardly anything. But life insurance companies are required to. Because remember, all those life policies are going to come due. They have to have up reserves to cover that when it comes due. You can't just say, next week I'll put up some reserves. When you write the policy, you have to have reserves in case it came due tomorrow. You might have 50 of them come due tomorrow. You have to be able to pay it out, okay? And life insurance companies can pay out $10 or $20 million in a heartbeat. They don't even think about it. We've had, you know, we've had some huge policies. We've had the $15 million one last year. We've had the $14 million Whitworth in 2016. They paid it instantly.
It's just pocket change to them.
It is just pocket change. So you don't really have to worry about the life insurance companies, okay? That is really the least of your problem.
But in the interest of all transparency, you have to tell them that, just no matter how small the risk is.
We're going to tell them every time.
Yeah.
And then the third risk is it's not liquid. This is not a liquid product. You're in a life insurance policy and are going to be there for 2 years. So if somebody came in and didn't tell us what their net worth really was, and 6 months later they need that cash, you know, we know they've storied. And they say, can I sell my policy? When I hear that word, I go back and look and see what they told me they were worth to start with. And I mark it down. And when that policy comes due, we send them back their money. Because they should not be in this because they do not have the assets they claimed they did.
These funds are not, you can't, this is not a paycheck. The funds are tied up until the policy matures.
That's right. Then when the policy matures, you've got plenty of money. You can say, Faith, send me $50,000, say, send me $10,000, or leave it and roll it over. Our people are all in IRAs almost exclusively. So we roll that over and just keep making money for them. And then they go tell their friends, Faye has done a good job, and we've got this many policies have matured. And that's pretty good.
That is great. That is fantastic.
We love it.
This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. The phone number is
877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring. Right next to Ivy Cottage.
And, of course, the website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com. Now, every Saturday morning around this time, we start getting into trivia because you bring some of the most interesting fun facts, things that I've never heard of before. And so this is one of the big highlights of my week. What are we talking about today?
Today we're going to talk about Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport.
All right.
And you not being a Texan, I know you won't know the facts and figures.
No, of course not. But I have been through DFW many times.
Okay. Dallas-Fort Worth, it is the largest hub, first of all, for American Airlines. Okay? How many passengers per year do you think are flying through it?
50.
65 million.
That's what I meant. Wow.
It's the third busiest airport in the world.
Really?
Yes. It's the 11th busiest airport in the world by passenger traffic, okay? Of course, it's the biggest, busiest airport in Texas. We know that. It has its own post office.
Does it?
Has its own zip code. Has its own postal service city.
Really?
It has its own police department. Has its own fire. Has its own emergency medical services.
Wow.
Yes. Now, this airport, it's got a long history. The members of the airport's board, of course, are appointed by Dallas and Fort Worth. If you realize it's called DFW, Dallas Fort Worth, and you know, is according to passenger satisfactions, they are the best airport in North America.
You know, and I believe that too, because I, you know, I've been through many airports, and I love coming through DFW because it's so easy to navigate. It's so smooth. It just flows seamlessly every time I've been through it.
And there's more than 40 million passengers. It beats out Atlanta. It beats out Denver. And you know, Atlanta is a big hub, but yeah, this does beat it out. Let me tell you how it started out. In 1927, before we even thought about it, Dallas said, let's talk to Fort Worth. Let's build an airport together. This is back in 27. And, of course, Fort Worth declined. And then each city opened its own airport. They opened Love Field, and then Fort Worth opened Meacham Field. Well, in 1940, now this is hilarious, they earmarked $1.9 million to build a regional airport in the 40s.
$1.9 million.
$1.9 million. And now American and Braniff, you remember Braniff?
Mm-hmm.
They struck a deal with the city of Arlington to build an airport. But everybody disagreed. So they abandoned that project in 1942 after World War II. So then Fort Worth comes on. They annexed the site. And they developed it into Amon Carter Field. That's after Mr. Carter, Amon Carter over there, that owns the newspapers. So with the help of American Airlines, in 1953, Fort Worth said, we'll transfer everything from Meacham Field to the new airport. So in 1960, Fort Worth purchased Amon Carter Field, and they renamed it Great Southwest International Airport. International back then. And so they were going to compete with Dallas Airport. Well, by the 1960s, Fort Worth was only getting 1% of the air traffic, and Dallas was getting 49 cents. So it led to abandonment of that plan. So that every time they came up with a plan, the two cities had a fight, couldn't agree, so things just kept going along. So then in 1961, the Federal Aviation Administration said, we're not investing any more money in these separate airports. This stuff has got to stop. So they abandoned it. So then Dallas Love Field became congested, had no more room to expand, and they said, we're going to choose a site if the cities don't get their act together and come to an agreement. So they purchased this land in 1966. They started construction on it in 69. So then they asked Dallas-Fort Worth people to approve this new North Texas Regional Airport. And so they formed the North Texas Airport Commission. So under the old design, they were going to have pier-shaped terminals, and they were going to face the highway. And in 1968, they said, no. We're going to do semicircular terminals. And you see how well they work because you've been out there.
Oh, yeah, I love it. It's a brilliant design.
It is. So they opened it and dedicated it in 1973. That's how long it took. Now, the first landing was one of the Concords, Air France.
Really?
They were en route from Caracas to Paris. And this was when John Connally, former governor, U.S. Senator Lloyd Benson, and then Texas Governor Dolph Briscoe was there, you know, to open the airport. And that's when it started, in 1973.
Wow.
It's the 10th busiest international gateway. They have 900 flights a day.
Really?
DFW is larger than the island of Manhattan. It has 29 square miles.
Wow.
Can you imagine 29 square miles?
So that's why they have their own ecosystem with their own police and their own zip code and all that.
Yeah.
That's
now,
huge.
What do you think it cost in 73 to build it?
I don't even have a guess. $50 million.
$700 million. I mean, it's a long cry from that $1.9 million they were going to allow.
Yeah.
And it did not become Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport until 1985.
Oh, really?
Yes. It's just amazing. So they now have 165 gates.
Wow.
They have five terminals. Now, they've just spent $2 billion updating it. $2 billion.
Really? When did they do that?
From 11 to right now.
Okay.
Yeah. And they also have lengthened, in 1996, they lengthened all the runways. The runways were all 11,388 feet. They are now 13,400 feet.
Why is that? Why did they need to be longer?
Well, for the bigger jets. And, of course, you know, the Airbus, those will now be flying here. The Saudis and all these people have bought these new Airbuses, and that was not going to work. So they have reconstructed again and changed a lot of things for the Airbuses where that they can actually land there and that they have the room. But the semicircular deals was a spectacular move. And, of course, as you know now, they have got everything in the world out there.
Yeah.
You know, they've got every kind of restaurant. I mean, good restaurants, not just little, you know, Sonics and things like that. They have got everything. And if you remember, originally, they had two hotels right there in the middle. And you could come out and go to either hotel, the East Tower or the West Tower. And then they eventually had to tear down the hotel because they needed more room. They had to build more concourses, and that's what they had to do.
Wow, I don't even...
Can you imagine the international part of it, which is Terminal D, has 2 million square feet.
That's amazing.
And it can handle 32,000 passengers a day.
Wow.
Or 11 million passengers a year. They have 200 ticketing positions.
That is insane.
It's actually, they have 100,000 feet of restaurants and stores in the international department. 100,000 feet.
Wow. That's like a mall.
It is like a mall. They have 8,000 parking spaces. And that is the 8-level garage. Now, I can remember going out to the airport. They have that close-in parking that they did deliberately, which is wonderful. It costs more, but you can park right there and just walk in to the airport to where you're going, which is really close.
Yeah.
And you remember when they built that people mover? It really, I thought it was a disaster because it was on the outside of the terminals. You couldn't get to it. And people got lost on it, and they eventually did away with that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the story was there was an elderly lady came in from another city and was on it for 2.5 hours.
Are you serious?
Could not figure out how to get off. Yes.
Wow.
And her family was just hysterical trying to find her.
I couldn't even imagine 2.5 hours on that thing.
Oh, it would have been heck. I mean, I rode it once, and I did not like it at all.
Wow.
And, of course, we never parked on the outer skirts of the parking. We always parked in close.
Yeah.
But we would go over to the airport sometimes on a Friday night and eat at that restaurant at the one hotel. It was a seafood place, and it was fabulous. You could get a 5-pound lobster there.
Really?
It was a fabulous place. And that was, you know, fine dining out at the airport.
That's amazing. That is so cool.
It's really a cool place, and it amazes me that it took that many years, from 1927 to 73, to finally get an international airport everybody could agree on.
I'm willing to bet that airports, if they're being, you know, designed for a remodel, or even if they're building new airports, this is a model of, hey, we want to emulate this, or we want to copy this kind of a design.
Yes, it's the best design I've ever seen because it's so friendly to the passengers.
Yeah.
You know, that semicircle just works. That's all there is to it.
It really does.
And I've many a time, the Sky Chiefs are right there, you know, when you pull up, and they'll just take your bags, you know, go through security right there. And I always thought that was pretty neat.
Yeah.
And nothing is very far away. I love that part. And, you know, when they built it between the two cities, they did a heck of a job. When I first saw it, I remember years ago, I thought, will anybody really come out here and use this? It's so far. And then, it turns out to be right in the middle of everything.
Yeah, it's massive and huge. Beautiful. It's great to navigate through, and it's actually a pleasant experience to go through DFW.
Yes, it is. It's not like a lot of the other airports I've been through. I remember LAX and all those.
Oh, yeah.
And they have all those escalators, and they have people movers. I mean, it's a madhouse.
Yeah,
and,
it really
it's
is.
Not the pleasant experience that you get at DFW.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think it's a good story.
It is. It's a great story, and it's another thing for Texans to be proud of.
It is. You know, Texans have, I think, the greatest things on earth. You know, I think there's so many wonderful things here that no other city or no other state has.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And people are friendly here. I mean, you can go through the airport. People are very, very friendly.
Oh, my gosh, yes. Everybody says hello. They're willing to, you know, help you. I saw somebody the last time I flew through DFW, I saw somebody actually get out of their seat for a lady who was pregnant and let her sit down. The whole waiting area was crowded, and so he got up and let her sit down. It was great. It stuck out, and I remembered it.
Well, and the last time I flew, which, you know, I don't fly very much. I had an overnight bag that was very heavy, and I was trying to figure out how I was going to get it up there in the bin. A man immediately stepped up and put it up there and shut the bin for me.
Wow, that's great.
And then when I got ready to leave, I was looking up there, and a man on that fly reached up, said, "Which one's yours?" And I told him, he got it down for me.
Wow.
So only in Texas are people that friendly and that helpful.
Yes, yes, that is the truth.
And so it's always a good day to be a Texan.
Of course it is. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. The phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage. And it's almost Easter. Remember that.
That's right. That's right. It's about a week away, I think. Isn't it next weekend?
I think it is. I believe it's next weekend. And, you know, people don't buy Easter bonnets and gloves anymore.
No.
But a little girl still get new dresses.
Yes, of course. And that's one of the greatest things about this time of year is that people get all dressed up for Easter, and it's a true mark of spring and the rebirth of nature and all that stuff.
That's right. And, you know, hunting the Easter eggs and going to church.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody always goes to church on Easter Sunday. They go out to eat, and then they hide the eggs over and over again. But now, you know, the new deal is you have to use the plastic eggs. They don't use real ones anymore.
Oh, no. You get salmonella.
Yes, you would, because they've been out in the sun too long.
Yeah. We didn't worry about that in the old days.
No, in the old days, people never even thought about it. Because, you know, they'd been out so long, you threw them away anyway, because you've roughhoused those eggs pretty bad.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody remembers the day when the kids accidentally left some under the sofa. You remember those days?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was one of those.
And they found them a week or two later. That was not a good deal.
You started to smell something funky, and it's like, where is that coming from?
That's right. And you start turning the sofas up. Yes, I remember those days.
Oh, yeah. All right, I know you got to go. I know you got to run to a meeting real quick. If somebody has been procrastinating, they're tired of the stock market, they're ready to really start buckling down and start getting ready for retirement and start saving and start making some serious money, what are a couple things that people need to do right now?
They need to call. Let's make an appointment. Bring over their statements. Let's look. Is it an old annuity that you're upset about, hadn't made any money? Is it a 401k, an IRA? Let's look at it. Let's look at it and give you an opinion on it and go from there. And we would appreciate their business.
And the number that they need to call to set up an appointment is?
It's 877-588-3330. Oh, and we never say that. They're going to ask them some questions. And don't be shy and don't think we're trying to get into your business or anything personal. But you have to be qualified, and they're going to ask you that, okay?
That's fabulous. Faye, thank you so much. Have a great week.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Your Money with Fay Bagby, sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Fay Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold. This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.